Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whoops. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
And a minimal salary cap hit. Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Kyron Samuels is college football writer and analyst for SI, covering Oregon and USC. Also, we have a podcast called the G5 Classified Podcast. We're two episodes in. Second episode featured UNLV head coach Barry Odom after that 20-point win that he had on the road against Houston. That doesn't happen at UNLV, but Kyron is on X at Kyron Samuels. Kyron, what's happening, man?
What's happening, man? Happy to be back on for another week.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Now, I have to start with our podcast this week. Every time I talk with Coach Odom, with Barry Odom, I just come away impressed, man. And to see what he's doing at UNLV, isn't that unbelievable? Like, we both went to G5 schools. You went to Jacksonville State. I went to Memphis. That team put themselves on the map in week one when we thought maybe they were a far-out dark horse to be the Group of Five represented in the college football playoff. Now, I know they have a tougher schedule, and the Mountain West is going to be tough. They're still going to have to deal with Boise State, teams like that. But that team is very, very good.
100%. And they're led by a quarterback who I've had my eyes on for years, Matthew Sluka, who was the quarterback at Holy Cross, an FCS school. I got to watch them in the playoffs a couple years ago against South Dakota State, the defending champions. And I was like, man, I can't believe this kid has not been poached from the portal yet, with the portal being open. And lo and behold, a couple years later, he's at UNLV, man. And UNLV has a talented roster. They have a player that we talked about on the podcast with Coach Odom, in Ricky White, a wide receiver, who I believe is, you know, back half of the first round, early second round, at minimum a top 50 type of guy at receiver for them. So they have some talent there, and I'm excited to see them progress through the year because they do have a difficult schedule. But if this week showed us anything, is that they can compete with anybody they're going to play this year.
Now, one thing that he did say that I found pretty interesting, because it's usually been the AAC, but we know the AAC has lost a lot of power from like programs leaving the conference in general. He says he thinks whoever wins the Mountain West should be in the 12-team playoff. Now, I know he's going to say that. That's just sort of natural. But he was very convicted in his thought there. And we have talked about in the past who we think sort of the best Group of Five conferences. He seems to think it's Mountain West, and everybody else is you know, competing for a distant second.
Yeah, I mean, he makes a compelling case. I mean, listen, I know he's a football coach, and he's gifted with the gab, and he can recruit and all that, but he had me believing there for a second that the Mountain West is actually the toughest conference for the G5. I don't still believe that. I still believe Sun Belt top to bottom is still the most difficult G5 conference, but he makes fair points, man. I mean, they have, look at Boise State, You look at teams like Colorado State that are going to be improved there at the end. I mean, they have a tough schedule top to bottom with road games at Oregon State. They're going to play some other difficult teams here. So he makes a compelling case that, hey, if you go through that schedule, you're going to play these teams that are going to be fringe top 25 teams that are going to have NFL talents like Boise State running back Ashton Jeanty. We know you're going to play some talented teams. If you go through that gauntlet and you win the Mountain West Championship game, you should be able to have a compelling case to get in. So I'm with him there.
Yeah, no, I'll say this. I did just sort of look at, like, we sort of put a three-horse race, I guess, for the group of five for that college football playoff spot, and it was Boise State, Liberty, and Memphis, and none of those teams looked all that great. Memphis, of course, won 40-0 over North Alabama, but couldn't run the ball. Boise State gave up 45 points at Georgia Southern, and then you had Liberty only beat Campbell 41-24. Like, it's after week one, does it not look as wide open as possible?
I don't want to make too...
You don't want to go too crazy after week one?
Right. After week one, I'm going to give them a little bit of bail because I look at, like, let's look at the bigger programs, right? Like, you look at Oregon. They didn't impress against FCS Idaho, right? They didn't look good against them at all. But I'm not going to say that they don't have a chance to win a national championship or to win the Big Ten
right now.
So I'm not going to do that with those teams. I'm going to stick true to our predictions. I believe, especially for a Boise State, right, that has a guy like Ashton Jeanty. He's such a dynamic player. He's such an explosive Heisman-type player, in my opinion, that he's going to keep them in any game they play. So even if the defense is not the best, we've seen defenses in the past. Like, we'll look at a team like LSU. I'm not comparing them to 2019 LSU, don't get me wrong. But that wasn't the greatest defense in the world. And you know, they have if you have enough talent on offense, you can overcome pretty much anything. So I think that Boise State is still my favorite to come out of the G5. I really do think that they're talented enough to make it through that. But like you said, it may be a little bit more open than we were hoping at the beginning of the season.
Now, Ashton Jeanty, is there any way after week one that you could leave him out of a top five Heisman conversation right this second? 20 carries, 267 yards, and 6 freaking touchdowns against Georgia Southern. It seems like there is no actual way to keep him out of that conversation, at least right this second.
No, you can't. I mean, I wrote about it on SI this week. I mean, Oregon's getting ready to play these guys, and it's a night game, so they're not going to have to worry about they're not going to have the advantage of being in the sun and having this guy cramp out early. They're going to get him at night at 9 o'clock Central Time, so they're going to get him in an advantageous position for him. So he's the guy that I think is going to go in there and run for another 100 yards against an Oregon defense that has a pretty solid run defense, man, and I think he's just such a dynamic player, true NFL talent. Like, you know, we talk about the running back positional value thing all the time. He's a guy that I think doesn't make it past the second round, in my opinion, at worst. He's a guy that's that talented. And Dan Lanning said he's the best guy I've ever seen. So, he said the best guy I've seen while I've been here.
Yeah, right.
At his time at Oregon, he said, hey, this is the best guy we've scouted. This is the best guy we had to be against. And that says a lot because, you know, he was at Georgia. You know, he was at Alabama. So he knows what those guys look like. And for him to say that is the highest compliment you can give a guy like Jeanty.
Now, we'll get back to the G5 conversation in a second because I want to visit this Memphis-Florida State matchup that we'll see in a couple of weeks after Florida State dropped their first two games of the year. They're 0-2 in the ACC, 0-2 in general through the first week. We're not even at week two, and they are already struggling really badly. So it looks a little different. Like, the backdrop of that game looks a little bit different. But I want to transition to week one in general. We'll sort of rehash this. What was the most impressive performance that you saw put out there in week one?
I'm going to probably go with Georgia's defense. Georgia's defense looked incredible. And I'm not going to, you know, say that Clemson has the best offense in the world, right? But just the amount of volume and players that they played, how disciplined they were, the amount of team speed that they have, the coverage on the back end. I mean, Clemson didn't do much of anything on offense unless it was Kate Clubbett making an incredible throw and one of the receivers making an incredible catch, or the tight end, Bringstool, making an incredible catch. I mean, they got little of nothing on offense. So when I look at Georgia, they retooled where they were supposed to retool. They end up getting rid of Jamon Dumas Johnson, who was an All-American. He's going to be an NFL player. Transferred out because he probably wasn't going to get a chance to play a ton behind all those guys, those young guys that they have that have taken over the fold, like C.J. Allen. They have a guy that's dynamic on the edge like Jaylen Walker and Mykael Williams. Then you have the freshmen on the back end and K.J. Bolden and Ellis Robinson. And they just have a ton of team talent that I don't think I've seen this in a long time, maybe since you know, 2015, 2016 Alabama. I think this defense is just the fastest defense I've seen since then.
Now, I want to talk about the Georgia offense because I know this is bothering you a tad bit, and you watch a lot of film when it comes to, like, you know, projecting guys into the NFL draft and where they're going to be slotted by the time we get to the 2025 NFL draft. But Carson Beck, it feels like a lot of people are docking him for being quote-unquote boring, I guess is the best way to put it. What did you think about his week one performance, and what do you think about the conversations that are being had about Carson Beck right now?
Yeah, it bugs me to no end because it's just such an easy evaluation. I think people overthink it, right? Like when you get the Patrick Mahomes of the world, the Josh Allen, even the Caleb Williams, looking at some, you know, college guys, even a guy like Cam Ward, if you compare him to a Cam Ward or Shedeur Sanders, you watch those other guys play, and they do some miraculous stuff on the football field, right? They make the really hard look really easy. They make some stuff that looks very difficult look routine. And, you know, Carson Beck's just not that guy, and that's okay because right. The process is at the highest level. He gets the ball out on time. He gets the ball out in rhythm. He has really good ball placement. He's really good inside of the red zone. I think that's an underrated aspect of quarterback play. When the field condenses, when they know you're going to, you know, throw these short routes, these in-breaking routes, quick out-breaking routes, can you still be accurate? Can you manipulate defenders with your eyes? Can you go through the baby steps to get to where you need to be? And Carson Beck is that guy all the time. You hear people compare him to Jared Goff all the time, like that's a negative.
Right.
No, Jared Goff is, you know, a three-time Pro Bowler who's been to two NFC championships, been to a Super Bowl, has over $200 million in contract value over his career, went number one pick overall. If you can become that guy, and I think he's that type of guy with a little bit more athleticism. He has enough quick twitch and power in his legs. If you watch him, he manipulates the pocket very well, and if nothing's there, he'll take off and get you that first down and slide and go to the next play. So he's a guy that I think has that Goff-esque ability with a little bit more athleticism. And if you're talking about projecting that to the next level, that's a damn good football player.
Everybody wants to see, like, the layered corner route where you have a safety over top and a corner underneath and they just put it in a bucket. Like, everybody wants to see that. But in the end of the day, some of the best quarterbacks in the NFL, I think, can be boring at times. I think Dak Prescott can be boring at times. I think Jared Goff can be boring at times. Tom Brady certainly was boring at times. Hell, Patrick Mahomes, I mean, he had obviously, I don't think he's a boring player by any stretch of the imagination, but some games he can look boring when he checks the ball down and just makes the right read every single play. You know what I mean? Like, I feel as if we have a warped view of what a quarterback should look like, and I think Patrick Mahomes definitely has done that with the behind-the-back passes and the no-look passes and, like, making a play on third down to Travis Kelce where he's just sort of flipping one out to him to make sure they convert. Like, I think he's warped it, but at the same time, I think as a quarterback, being boring is not necessarily a bad thing. I think that's a good thing most of the time.
Especially when you're playing defense as good as Clemson. Like, I think people forget how good that Clemson defense is. They have arguably the best, you know, interior defensive line in the country. I think Michigan is probably the best. But DeMonte Capehart, Peter Woods, those type of guys that they have in the front. You have Avion Terrell, A.J. Terrell, who's an all-pro for the Atlanta Falcons. His younger brother is going to be a high draft pick here soon from that Clemson backfield. I mean, when you're playing teams that good, I don't want you to be the superstar that's doing all the extra stuff. I don't need you to be the Patrick Mahomes type that's going to run around with his head cut off and then make a miraculous play. I need you to get the ball out on time. I need you to beat these pressures to alleviate the pressure on the offensive line. And then, in turn, that opens up everything else. You saw as the game progressed, Carson Beck took those dink and dunks, those quick routes, and then Nate Frazier in the second half really start to pile it on because the run game started to open up because, you know, they have to account for those people on the outside. And then the box gets thinner, the offensive line gets more in the sink, and then the whole team starts to roll. So I think people really take for granted how good routine quarterback play opens everything else up for the rest of the team.
And I do also think, and this is a little bit against what we've been talking about, I think maybe the 2024 class of quarterbacks is going to warp our mind going into next year. You know what I mean? I feel like 2025 right. class is just not going to be as good, but that's not necessarily a horrible thing. I still think there's a lot of talent.
Yeah, there's still a ton of talent. I mean, you look at guys like we've already talked about Carson Beck. We slightly mentioned Shedeur Sanders. Shedeur Sanders is my quarterback, too, at the moment. He's a very talented guy. We've talked about this off air. He doesn't have, like, you know, the Josh Allen cannon arm, But, man, he has discernment. He knows when to put the zip on it, and he has the ability to put that zip on the ball. He knows when to layer the ball, how to put the touch on the ball. He has very good ball placement. He has a good D ball. He checks all the boxes for me. The only thing that he doesn't have is this super alien arm, Mahomes arm and Allen arm that everybody's become accustomed to wanting now. But that's not most quarterbacks. You look over the course of the history of the NFL, there's been a ton of quarterbacks that have made it work with less than pre-arms. Even a guy like, you know, Peyton Manning didn't have the most incredible arm, but he had the processing ability, the timing. He knew where to put the ball and how to get it there. Same with a guy like Tom Brady, who I think has underrated, you know, natural ability, but he didn't have a Josh Allen, you know, Dan Marino arm. So those guys over the course of NFL history have done well. So I think Shador is, I'm not saying he's going to beat those guys, but he has a lot of those qualities. And another guy I'll throw out there, because there's just way too early to do anything past three or four guys, in my opinion. Quinn Ewers is a guy that I think is underrated at this point. I'm not sure how high of a draft pick he's going to be. He could be a mid-first-round type of guy. He could be a guy that you steal early day two, but I don't think he falls anything past that. He's a guy that is plenty talented, that's going to have a monster year this year, and just because he has that guy Arch Manning nipping at his heels, I think people are going to undervalue how good he actually is.
Now, there's another quarterback that I think finally sort of made his name known on the national scene. I know he's been at Washington State. He's been at Incarnate Word, but Cam Ward, what he did against Florida. 41-17 win Miami had on the road in the Swamp. He had 385 yards and three touchdowns. But what I mean, the state of Florida is in complete disarray right now. Florida and Florida State completely down, and Miami has taken over. It feels like the early 2000s.
Yeah, it's awesome to see those guys back. I looked at the game, man, and I just couldn't believe it. I grew up watching Rex Grossman in the, you know, Florida Gators playing the Miami Hurricanes, and it's a game that, you know, I've missed, frankly. It's a game that I grew up watching with my uncles when we were all together watching the game, and you would play even on the NCAA games. You know, you want to play with the U. You want to play with Florida, those type of teams. So it was cool to see it back. The atmosphere, at least for the first half in the Swamp, was insane, but it was an impressive performance from Miami and the Hurricanes, especially from the quarterback Cam Ward. That offensive line is dang good. I don't think Alex Mirabal gets enough credit for how good of an offensive line coach he is, and Coach Mario Cristobal himself, who was an offensive line coach at the University of Alabama under Nick Saban, their expertise in that front is starting to show a little bit. 2 years in a row, they put together some really good offensive lines, and it's giving Cam Ward everything he needs to go out there and just have fun. Xavier Restrepo out there on the outside of receiver has done a heck of a job. And that defense flies around, man. We talked about it on the podcast, but you made a great point that everybody was saying that Florida State's defensive line is the best in the country. And it really looks like Miami is probably a much better defensive line than those guys. They have some guys that are physical, fast, fly to the ball. So it was really cool to see the U have some of that swagger back. And We don't have to talk about the other two Florida teams. They look pretty terrible. Somebody said that they're going to be playing on Tubi by the time that game gets here. So hopefully, you know, just for the sake of those programs and those players that are going through that, they can find a little bit of momentum here, but Miami certainly looks like the cream of the crop.
Is Miami, like, I just looked at the ACC, and again, I know we don't want to make, like, these declarative statements, ridiculously declarative statements after week one, but Miami at the top of the ACC just seems like an absolute lock after week one. I mean, Virginia Tech was supposed to be a team that chose something. They end up losing to Vandy. North Carolina barely, you know, squeaked one out 19-17. SMU didn't look all that great against Nevada. In week zero, like I just look at the rest of the ACC and it just feels like Miami is in the driver's seat. It is theirs to lose.
Yeah, Miami 100% is in the driver's seat because I think that they just played probably their most difficult regular season game in week one on the road at the Swamp. I mean, it doesn't get much better. It doesn't get much more difficult for them than that. I mean, the rest of the season, they're going to play the next two games. They play Florida A&M, Ball State, and then they go to USF. That's probably the toughest game remaining for them. They still have the regular conference games, but I don't think that Louisville is a team that I've seen that can challenge them in terms of an explosive offense standpoint. I don't see anybody remaining on their schedule that's going to be overly tough. Maybe at Syracuse that last week, but Syracuse, Wake Forest, Georgia Tech, Duke, Florida State, Louisville, Cal. That's their remaining schedule after the first three games I just named. So I don't see anybody particularly that can match them athletically. And if the offensive line holds true to how I believe they're going to play, I'm not saying this is a team that can run the table and go undefeated, But 11-1 doesn't seem too far-fetched to me at all.
All right, now talking with Kyren Samuels, at Kyren Samuels on X, college football writer and analyst for SI. We also have a podcast called the G5 Classified Podcast. Had Barry Odom on this week. I would suggest you guys go and listen to that Apple, Spotify, full-length video version on YouTube. Now, I want your opinion, because you're obviously we get caught in this echo chamber here in Memphis about this Memphis-Florida State game. Obviously, Memphis has to get through Troy this week, and that's going to be a little bit more tough of a matchup than North Alabama. But most of us are talking about it. It's not a free shot anymore, and it seems like a game you have to go and win. Like, how do you view this? I think most of us were wanting this to be sort of a easy, free shot, top 10 game. You go on the road to go play a top 10 opponent and just play close and you feel good about it. I think most of us have changed our opinion, but I don't know if you have. I think you are maybe a little bit annoyed with the conversation coming out of Memphis at this particular moment about that game.
Yeah, a little bit. I think that, it's probably the former player in me, right? It's hard to turn that brain off sometimes when you need to be a media guy, be an analyst, and be a little bit more practical thinking. But my logic is that, hey, Memphis should expect to go in there and kick their butts regardless.
Yes.
If they were 2-0 and look like the best team in the country, or they're sitting here 0-2 and have gotten embarrassed the first 2 weeks of the season. I don't think Memphis, from a team standpoint, a coaching standpoint, should have any different expectations than they did before this. I think they should go in there with the mindset that, hey, we are the better football team. We have better athletes on the outside. We expect to win this game. And I understand that there is added pressure now that if you don't get it done, it does look a little different. It's going to be a game that is going to be held over your head unless Florida State turns their season around miraculously and goes 9-3, 8-4 type season that nobody sees for them right now. Then, the loss, maybe if you were to lose to them, it looks a little bit better at the end of the season. But I don't think they should worry about that. I don't think the media should be thinking about that. The expectation should be to go in there and play the best of your ability. And if your team is as good as you think it is, it should be able to beat Florida State this year.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you. But at the same time, it's just I can see where there's a lot of Memphis fans that certainly feel a type of way. Now, I want to transition into this week. We have week two on the way, and I think the biggest matchup, number 3 versus number 10, 11 a.m. on Fox, Texas visiting Michigan. It's hard for me, after seeing what Michigan ran out there last week, former walk-on Davis Warren as their starting quarterback, not Alex Orji, who we thought was going to be the starter. It's hard for me to imagine this Michigan team being able to get over top of a team like Texas, who I thought looked pretty impressive in week one.
Yeah, I think that Michigan's defense is going to look better than it did this past week. I mean, listen, they didn't look terrible, but I think they're going to have to play a little bit better, and I think that they will. But ultimately, I think Texas just has too many tools. They have too many players at their disposal. Sark is too good of a coach. Nobody has really shut down that offense in the last 2 years. They've had games where they haven't been as explosive and they're not scoring 40 points, but nobody's really figured them out and had their number where they aren't putting up 28-plus points a game in those types of situations. And I think that'll be enough to win over a team like Michigan. Like you said, still figuring it out on offense. Donovan Edwards did not look very good at all.
11 carries for 27 yards, not great.
Yeah, not great. They're replacing 4 guys on the offensive line. It's just so much that they're having to fix on the fly. I don't think they're going to be ready yet for that. So I do think it's going to be a fun game. Listen, anytime you have a team like Texas that gets to go to the Big House, that's going to be a hell of an atmosphere. That's going to be a great game in terms of NFL prospects, if you're into that thing. A ton of NFL prospects. My guy Jordan Reed works for ESPN as a draft analyst. He tweeted out this morning, Isaiah Bond versus Will Johnson, and he had a popcorn emoji next to it. And that's going to be awesome. Both of those guys have first-round potential. So to see wide receiver Isaiah Bond go up against, in my opinion, the best cornerback in the country, and Will Johnson for Michigan, that's the matchup I'm looking for. From the interior, you have Mason Graham, and you have Kenneth Grant for Michigan's defensive line. On the interior of Texas offensive line, you have Jake Major, you have DJ Campbell, you have a ton of veteran guys, a ton of NFL players there. So it's going to be a fun matchup, but one that I ultimately expect Texas to come out on top of pretty comfortably.
Now, I saw this from a Michigan podcast, and I don't know if you've seen the clip, but it's a big Michigan fan on a pretty solid podcast, one that makes some waves. But he said, if you're Michigan, you pack the box, you hold Texas down, make them beat you through the air, that type of thing. If you're able to stop their run, Quinn Ewers and that offense can become, a little one-dimensional. I view it the other way around. If Texas packs the box and keeps Donovan Edwards held down, I feel like it's going to be a runaway for Texas. But what is the formula for Michigan to go win this game?
First of all, defense just plays to their ability, right? I think if the defense plays to their ability, they can hold Texas into that 20 to 28 range that I speak of.
Right.
And then you're going to need a takeover, too. I think that's going to be paramount for them. They're going to have to, if not a takeaway with an interception or a fumble recovery, we need a couple sacks. We need a couple sack strips that are going to put them out of field goal range or just a kill drive. You need those big splash plays, and you need them consistently. You're going to need at least one or two a quarter if you're going to have a chance to compete in this game because, like you said, the offense is just not up to par yet. So that defense is going to have to be the one to put their offense in advantageous positions. And if their offense is in those positions in the red area on the plus side of the field, you're going to have to go almost 100% in those goal-to-go situations, in those plus area situations in terms of scoring, whether it's a field goal or a touchdown. You're going to have to be almost perfect in those situations if you're Michigan. And that's the only path to victory I see for them.
Now, final thing I want to pick your brain on. In the SEC, we have a couple of local teams that looked really good in week one. Now, they didn't play good competition, but their quarterbacks absolutely lit it up. Offenses look great. Defenses look great as well. But Ole Miss and Tennessee. Tennessee, of course, is going to have the NC State game, and they're going to have to be able to manage themselves on the road. They are 10-point favorites, though. But what did you think about Ole Miss and Tennessee last week? Even though they didn't play great competition, it seemed like they absolutely dominated, and they are who we thought they were going to be.
Yeah, I tweeted or I texted in the group chat Saturday night. I was like, Lane Kiffin is a sick man because I keep looking at the score. I watch it.
I love how he didn't. You had the other team asking for a running clock. He said, absolutely not. Absolutely not.
Yeah, he's running up the score, man. And I just think that look, they have more weapons than they've ever had. They have more talent on that defense than they've ever had. And I think Pete Golden is a better coach than people give him credit for. He's a guy that has, led top 10 defenses at the University of Alabama. It wasn't the best defense in the country like we're used to seeing from those type of Alabama teams, but top 10 in the country as a defense is not bad at all, man. It's one of the best. And I think if Pete can, hold his standard, that seems going to be dangerous. And I think they have a favorable schedule to where we should see them in Atlanta for the SEC championship game. I believe in that team that much, and nothing on Saturday deterred me from that belief. And it was just cool to see Nico at quarterback for Tennessee. It was it was an exciting moment because I don't think they've had a talent like that at quarterback in a very, very long time. I love Hendon Hooker. I thought he was a fantastic player. Even Joe Milton I felt was a little bit overhated. He had a fine year last year. But, man, they haven't had a guy like this in a very, very long time. And it was just apparent from the first drive of the game. The way he layers his throws, the timing that he plays with, he doesn't look like a young guy. And I know he's been there for a year. He's got to sit, and he got some experience in the bowl game this past year against Iowa. But seeing him out there, his comfortability level, and it doesn't matter the competition, because we've seen, FCS programs upset these big-time schools. We just saw Vanderbilt, who is akin to an FCS program, beat a Virginia Tech team. So on any given Saturday, anybody can get got. So I thought it was an impressive performance, regardless of the talent. And that goes for both of those teams.
What do you think about Nico and what ultimately we will be saying about him by the end of the year? How much do you believe in what he's going to put out there on the field? I honestly think this, too, and this is something that I think is a little bit under-talked about. I think Josh Heupel is, like, the perfect coach for a guy like Nico, who can use his legs, who can definitely air it out, who has a lot of ability, dual threat ability. I just feel like this is the perfect situation for him. He landed in a great spot.
100%. I mean, he has a great track record, Heupel, that is, of getting the best out of guys. And, I know people, especially from an NFL perspective, they like to talk about, it's a gimmick offense and this and that. And, I don't care anything about that right now. I want that kid's talent and his ability level to be maximized. And like you said, he ended up in probably the perfect offense for that. And I think he's going to be every tool, every asset that he has is going to be maximized to the point where he's a guy that I think maybe not this year, but next year, will be firmly in the Heisman Trophy conversation. Yep. I think Tennessee is a team that's built to last. I mean, if you look at what they're doing in recruiting-wise right now, in terms of building offensive line depth, they're building that team the right way. I think Heupel was doing a sneakily good job of building that roster the right way, inside out. They have some very good talent. They have a great quarterback who's going to be there for at least the next two seasons. So I'm excited to see the future of Tennessee football because I think they're going to be a sneaky team that potentially could win 10 games this year. And for sure, going into next season, there'll be a team that'll be talking about towards the top of the country.
I think I'm with you. I think I'm absolutely there with you. Well, Kyren, I appreciate you, man. Enjoy week two, and we will catch up next week.
No problem. Appreciate you.
Yes, sir. That's Kyren Samuels at Kyren Samuels on X, college football writer and analyst for SI, covering Oregon and USC. And also make sure you check out our podcast where we are co-hosts, G5 Classified. Comes out every single Thursday at noon on the Bluff City Media and Believe Podcast Network. Now let's go ahead and grab a break on that note. And when we come back, we're going to hop directly in to the Blitz. And in the Blitz today, we have some very important things to discuss. Feels like there's a little bit of dysfunction, maybe a little bit of unhappiness going on in Denver with the Denver Nuggets. And we have a very interesting story coming away from golf. Looks like we're going to have a Tour versus LIV match. We'll tell you the details of that, and I'll tell you what I think about it next, right here on 92.9 FM ESPN.
Now, the biggest stories. Overloading the line. A bull rush of info. It's Gabe's Blitz on the Gabe Kuhn Show on 92.9 FM ESPN, Memphis' sports station.
And the Blitz on the Gabe Kuhn Show is brought to you by Sissy's Log Cabin. Connor, what we got today?
ESPN NBA insider Zach Lowe is reporting that the Denver Nuggets and head coach Michael Malone may not be getting along. There are rumblings, that the coaching staff and front office, or at least the head coach in the front office, aren't exactly seeing eye to eye in Denver, to a degree even unusual for the NBA. And I do have to say, when I read there are rumblings, I feel like in my head I'm thinking of George Costanza.
Yeah, rumblings!
Rumblings, Jerry!
Yes, I hear you. But you know what? I read this and I saw this report, and Connor, I'm not crazy for thinking this. Like, of course he's unhappy with what the Denver Nuggets brass is doing. They have not signed back all of their most important role players the past 2 years. Bruce Brown walked. Jeff Green walked. You have KCP walking. You didn't want to fork over the money to keep the good players around Nikola Jokic that you've seen have success with him and Jamal Murray in that dynamic duo they have. And to me, I think this is my take, and I'm kind of frustrated by this if I'm a Nuggets fan, although for the Grizzlies, it's kind of nice to see them sort of, you know, dissipate a little bit, fall a little bit down the Western Conference. It's nice to see that if you're a Grizzlies fan. But if you're a Denver Nuggets fan, I truly think that they won their championship, and now they're kind of resting on their laurels, saying, well, Nikola Jokic and Jamal Murray, that duo we have, they can get us to the promised land. We don't need all these role players. We've drafted some guys. You know, Christian Brown's going to step up. We'll see. It just feels like they're kind of resting after winning a championship, which I can see. Like, there's a lot of franchises in the history of sport in the United States of America that have done that. I look at the Rams, right? Obviously, it took a couple of years. They had a couple of gap years. They're finally back up, and it seems like they can compete this year. But you see this with franchises that don't often win championships. They win one, then they rest a little bit, and they're like, well, we got our championship in the bag. Our fans are on board. Let's see what we can do the next couple of years to save some money and, you know, make this thing happen again. I just feel like they're resting a little bit too much, and it doesn't surprise me in the slightest that Michael Malone is unhappy with the way that they have managed his roster.
I mean, yeah, every single offseason for the last 2 years, they have gotten worse. They've got 100% gotten worse. They're absolutely still a contending team in the Western Conference and in the NBA, but it's because of Nikola Jokic, and a lot is riding on Jamal Murray, and to be quite honest, he hasn't looked right.
He has not looked right.
The last, what?
Year and a half.
6 months that we've watched him play basketball?
I'd say year and a half. Since the championship, hadn't looked quite right.
Basically, since he got injured. When he got that major injury and he came back, he just has not looked right since. I do wonder, and, you know, I haven't heard anything or read anything about it, but part of me wonders if the Denver Nuggets front office is nervous to commit a lot to this Nuggets team because they don't know if Jokic is going to stick around for a while. Because I have.
What are you
heard,
thinking, like Mavs with Luka?
No,
like, what would we
I've
be thinking
heard people
there,
theorize that like Jokic might decide to retire. He's that type of player that might retire early. But at the same time, man,
maximize it while it's there. What are we doing?
I just don't understand why. They have let a couple of these guys walk. Because, for instance, like a guy like Jeff Green, keeping him on the roster wouldn't have cost you a lot of money, but he was a very valuable piece for you, and he could have still been effective. And one of the reasons I think that they lost in the playoffs last year was they just didn't have the same type of bench unit, and it got worse again this offseason. So, yeah, if I'm Mike Malone, I would be pretty upset. I would say, listen, everything that y'all have done has made my team worse the last 2 years, and it's not y'all's fault necessarily, but the rookie that y'all brought in to be a part of this team is not going to play for the entire season. So I'm down a bunch of men this year, and if we lose basketball games, I'm going to get the blame for it.
Yep. Yep. Now, here's the other part of this. You know, the two teams I just brought up about winning a championship, then resting on your laurels for a couple of years, the Rams and the Denver Nuggets, you know what they have in common? Do you know what they have in common? Exact same owner, Stan Kroenke.
Oh.
It's not surprising. I've seen this before.
Like, I don't know.
Stan Kroenke is their owner, and he wins his championship and then just sells hope for a couple of years before they get back up on their feet. He just doesn't want to spend all of the money that he was spending to go get a championship. And, I just find it ridiculous. And you're theorizing of Nikola Jokic maybe stepping away. This is one thing I will say about Nikola Jokic. I think he will play out the rest of his contract through 2027.
Owners are just dumb, though, and panic.
Yeah, no, but I think he'll play out the rest of his contract through 2027. And even with that, there just comes a point where we have this multiple-time MVP that could win it multiple times before his career is over. Why would I not maximize what I have while I still have that guy? Even if I think he may step off into the sunset and go, you know, train horses for the rest of his life. You know what I mean? Just take advantage of the moment that you have right now. But Stan Kroenke is very, very known for winning his championship, stepping back for a second, saying, all right, I'm good. I'm good. I don't need to pay, you know, into the luxury tax. I don't need to pay any more money. I don't need to write all these checks. You know, that's just sort of who he is as a guy.
Rory McIlroy and Scottie Scheffler will be playing Bryson DeChambeau and Brooks Koepka in a Tour vs. Live match that will be played in Las Vegas on TNT in mid-December. Any interest?
Some, not much. I know that, thinking about like the how do I even term it at this point now that everybody's in bed with each other with the Saudi money? I guess there's still a little bit of vitriol from some people on the tour going after Liv players, but not these guys. Like, this is going to be a very nice match. This is just like buddies getting together to go play a match for money and for... It doesn't interest me that much, Connor. I got to be honest with you. I want more F you in this type of thing. I want you to go get the guys that hate the Liv players more than life itself. I want to see a 12 versus 12 matchup. Who's better, PGA Tour or Liv? Just getting the two best players from each particular tour, and they're still going to be relatively friendly with each other. It just doesn't move me like it should. You should have a little bit more of back and forth, and I don't think this is going to provide us with that. It'll be a decently fun match to watch. I mean, they are great golfers, and they're going to make great shots, and you know, it's going to be televised on TNT, so that's cool. But I want more FU in this. I don't know about you.
No, I totally agree. If I'm going to get something like this, I want Tour versus Live Squid Game version.
Yes,
I want vitriol. I want hate. This is going to be too friendly. It's just a money-making scheme. I probably won't tune into this. I have almost zero interest in this, to be quite honest with you. I'll watch the clips from it. I'll probably, you know, keep up with it when it's happening. But I highly doubt I'm going to tune in because I agree with you. I think it's going to be too friendly. All four of these guys have too much to lose to really get into the into the mud here like it should be. That's why.
I want the mud.
Go get the guys that hate each other.
Exactly. I don't know who it was. It was Billy Horschel a couple of years ago that just despises the Liv play. I need someone out there who hates the Liv players from the PGA Tour side. I need someone out there from the Liv side who hates the PGA Tour. I need more hate. I need a little bit more hate back and forth for me to really buy into this. This is not going to be that, though.
No, and again, it does feel like, I don't know. I've just never really been a huge fan of these matchups, whether it's in boxing with celebrities or whether it's in golf, where it's basically like, hey, we're going to get these guys together and it's going to be a quote-unquote competition. But it's really just a tune in and watch
It's kind of like the NBA All-Star Game at this point, where it's just like, are you really trying all that
hard? Not as much, though, because it's friendly.
It's friendly is the point I'm making.
Yeah, I guess I just don't like these highly corporatized sporting events that have all of these sponsors, and it's not a real competition. And I think that's what bothers me about it.
It's not quite about the golf.
It's just like
it's not
all
quite
the
about
Paul
the sport.
Boxing matches and stuff. It's like none of them have ever interested me in a huge way because the competitive nature of it isn't going to be there. Like, one of the main reasons I like watching sports is the competitive nature of it. Everybody's trying to leave it all out there to win a game. And when that's not going to be present, I just don't have much interest.
Yeah, but I'm telling you, the best way that they could do this yearly is at the end of both seasons, get 12 best golfers from the PGA Tour, get the 12 best golfers from LIV, and then really fight it out like a real tournament.
And the bottom six die.
Yes. Yeah, you send them off. But no, I just think that would be a whole lot better, and I think more people would watch because you know that there's there's something they're really competing for. They're competing for pride, and this one, I just don't see any pride being competed for. I don't think either team
do golfers care about pride much.
But neither of these like teams, I guess, Rory and Scotty or Bryson and Brooks, they don't really care about winning the damn thing. I want someone who cares about winning ultimately, and I don't think this will be that.
Florida freshman quarterback and former five-star in the 2024 class, DJ Lagway, is slated to start against Samford. This comes after Graham Mertz suffered a concussion against Miami.
Yeah, Florida's cooked. We know that. Miami beat them 41-17. We know the back half of their schedule is going to be brutal. Maybe the Florida State game at the end of the year will be a little bit easier based on what we've seen from Florida State through 2 weeks. So that sort of takes away from one of their ranked matchups down the stretch of the season. But they're still going to have a really tough matchup or tough matchups in the SEC, and they're not going to save six wins. I'm there. I have said I think Billy Napier is going to get fired midseason, and I think this certainly adds to it. The fact that Graham Mertz gets hurt game one, and the idea of this season was to let DJ Lagway cook, like just bake in the oven really quick. Let's see what he can do after a year. That was going to be Billy Napier's saving grace, right? This dual threat quarterback that could potentially come out next year and be one of the best quarterbacks in the country. That was going to be a saving grace. Now you have to play him, and all of the Florida fans are going to be staring at him. If he has a tough game, it's not going to be a saving grace anymore. Even if he has a good game against, Samford, it's still not going to be a saving grace. The fact that Billy has to play him right now completely cooks any chance of him ever retaining that job. I never thought he was going to retain that job, but this definitely adds insult to injury for Billy Napier at Florida.
Good.
Yeah, I know you're fine with it.
Good.
But that was,
stay in hell, Florida.
But that was always supposed to be the idea. If Billy was going to keep his job, you save 6-6, and you save DJ Lagway for next year so you have hope. But now that you see DJ Lagway on the field, you're going to know sort of what he is already. And that kind of defeats the purpose of what this season was going to be.
It was so funny because during that game, when Mertz got hurt, they cut to Billy Napier, and you just saw his life flashing before his eyes. It was just the hello darkness, my old friend.
I agree with some of the people that are putting it out there on X. They basically put it out there as DJ Lagway led one of the best drives of the entire game for Florida. Yeah, but they were already down 41.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep. And when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a gel flex grid. The gel flex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the gel flex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines Gel Flex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
And a minimal salary cap hit. Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
You fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Odyssey celebrates National Hispanic Heritage Month, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... You deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame...
Two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo. Remarkable fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
1-10 or whatever the hell it
didn't
was.
Didn't he throw a pick?
Yeah, he did throw a pick. But I'm saying he did have a drive later in that game that looked pretty good, and they were moving the ball a little bit. But that was at the point where Miami probably took out some of their starters, didn't really give a damn. So it's like I can't read anything from that. And here's the other part of it for DJ Lagway. One thing I don't want to see, and it won't happen against Samford. I'm sure he'll be fine against Samford. I get that. But if he has to start in multiple games this year, if Graham Mertz's concussion is as bad as it seems to be, I don't want a guy like that to lose confidence and get frustrated with a wide receiver room that's not that great, with an O-line that's not all that awesome at pass protection. I don't want to see a guy like that lose confidence that has a lot that he could build upon and potentially be one of the best quarterbacks in college football at some point. I don't want to see that guy completely lose everything that got him to this point from a confidence perspective.
It's the worst possible schedule you could have as a freshman quarterback.
Yeah. I don't get the sense that Graham Mertz is going to be out for multiple weeks, but there's always that chance. But this is all bad. This is not good for Florida, and I know you revel in it. You're happy with it.
Fine. Yeah, they tortured me for a decade.
Yeah, I hear you. Now, we need to go ahead and grab a break on that note, and when we come back, we'll go ahead and wrap up.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Why does this room look amazing? What'd you change?
Oh, I just got these custom shades from Blinds.com. It's all online, so it's really easy. Great price, too.
Ugh, I remember shopping for Blinds. I waited around all day just to get a quote.
Hi, sorry I'm late. I know you said just the bedroom, but what do you feel about the
bathroom?
I feel
like I had to say yes, just to get rid of her.
All right, just go ahead and sign here and we'll get everything
taken
care of.
It took forever, and the worst part, hidden fees. How about you?
I chatted with my Blinds.com design consultant on my time, got free samples, and it was all super high quality at a great price. Plus, they make it easy to DIY or add installation like I did.
Blinds.com sounds way better.
Way better. And everything comes with their 100% satisfaction guarantee. Plus, check this out. I can control them from my phone.
Whoa, magic.
There's a better way. Shop Blinds.com for up to 45% off. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norsides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. nor taste combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Odyssey celebrates National Hispanic Heritage Month, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.